Here we go. We are live. I don't know if anybody is out there yet or not. Comment section, we usually have Torapoddle, who's usually on right away. But yeah, if you're out there and they're having trouble with their streaming destination for ZapStream. Man, I'll tell you what, ZapStream, we got to get this thing down. I don't know what's going on over there, but that's got to be, I mean, that's my favorite one, for God's sakes.
Oh, yeah, man.
Have you seen ZapStream yet?
Yeah, dude, that is some awesome stuff, man.
I'm optimistic about it. We've had it cut out about halfway through the last one. We're going to have to get Gary and Dr. Nick on that one. It's just one of those things where it almost needs the Noster blessing is what it needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool stuff though, man. It's a whole different way for people to interact, you know, when we're streaming out there. I mean, it's true value for value. It's amazing. And if you're listening to this and haven't checked it out yet, check it out. It's on the Noster protocol, and it's a way to it's basically a way to do this. You know, if you're watching this on YouTube or on X or whatever your platform of choice is, you can actually do this through Noster and then send zaps, engage with other listeners and viewers, and it's a totally different experience. It's cool stuff.
Yeah, I love the fact that Noster is barely started. The amount of technology that's there, the opportunity and what's going to happen over there, the incentivized, you know, like pull that says, hey, listen, not only are we free speech, but we're also not about throttling. We're not about algorithms. We're not about any of that kind of stuff. And we can communicate value to each other in real time with zaps. I mean, the way they've broken that down, that's one of my favorite things to do now. You know, you load it up, throw $100 on there, right? Which, you know, each to their own. You know, I don't know if you got tons and tons of Bitcoin or just a little bit of Bitcoin, but, you know, I think Zap start out at like 42 sats, which is, you know, fractions of nothing, right? It's just like, for now anyway. And you go through and you see somebody that's posting good stuff. They've got some good content, or they're meme lords, or they're, you know, putting up fantastic videos, and you start to zap that, or something like Ian Carroll comes over, right? Like Ian Carroll came over to Noster, made a huge post on, you know, Shitter about it. And, you know, there, you know, all of a sudden you've got more eyes on this thing. And it's, I mean, when I talk about this with people who are not in the Bitcoin space, you start to see like the ideas, you know, like they're like, oh, I don't understand it yet, but I kind of understand, you know, where this is headed. I like the ideas and what you're saying about it. I just need to learn how to use it. If you're on an iOS device, I highly recommend accessing this through Primal. Primal has done a fantastic job with their user interface. And when you go through and you zap it and you see like the little lightning bolts come in and bam, all of a sudden you're transmitting value to people. That means a lot more than just like a little heart. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a totally different experience, and it's much more interactive. And the thing about it is, that's really cool, is that it removes what am I trying to say? Impure incentives from creators that they may fall into, whether, you know, accidentally or intentionally, because the need for advertisers really goes away. You can just transmit value directly to somebody who's creating content just based on if you like it or not. And so it's not as much of, you know, you need sponsors, you need advertisers and all these other things. You can just, it's peer to peer, like literally direct value transfer. If you find that content to be something that brings value to you, send a couple of zaps over their way, and that encourages them to keep it going. Hey, Dr. Nick.
Dr. Nick in the house. If you guys don't know Dr. Nick, he doesn't do a lot on Twitter, but over on Noster, he's prevalent, and he's one of the best Bitcoin veterans we got. I hate to disappoint Dr. Nick first thing when he comes in here, but yeah, man, our Zap stream is down. I don't know what the connection issue is. We're gonna have to fix that ASAP tomorrow so that we can get that thing back up and running, because I do enjoy those guys over there.
See, get to work, damn it.
Yeah, if you're out there and you're watching and you want to help us spread this message, go ahead and send this out, retweet it on X. We'll get ZapStream up soon enough, for God's sakes. But yeah, X is where we're going to get most of our reach. Welcome to all 50 people that are out there. But we've got, I think it's going to be a pretty good show. I purposely have not scheduled anyone for this time of year because as Trump's been coming in, I was just like, man, there's going to be more news that we need to cover, especially from the veterans' point of view on this, that I don't think is going to be spoken about this way for, you know, for at least the first month. Next week, we have Ashton Forbes on. And I don't know, Gabe, if you're going to be able to make that show or not. But Ashton Forbes, if you don't know who he is, go out on Twitter and find Ashton Forbes. Ashton Forbes has been covering the MH370 flight out of Malaysia that disappeared. You know, the video with the orbs and everything else, zero-point technology. Oh, yeah. This guy's been talking, you know, top secret type of technology with some amazing people that have been in this space, and the credibility on Ashton Forbes is through the roof. I'm honestly kind of shocked that he's still on X for, you know, a lot of those reasons.
Yeah, still upright, I would say, also is probably a shock. Some things are more dangerous to talk about than other things. I'm just going to put it like that. But yeah, that is some wild stuff. Yeah, that's going to be an interesting conversation because it seems that the more the conversation goes on, and the more, because you can't shut everybody down. Okay, and so this is the power of a distributed network. To bring it back to Bitcoin, I guess, is that when you have different people talking about the same conversation points of a topic, and these people might not have any direct relation to one another, and yet they're sharing the same truth in different spheres. It gets kind of hard to deny those things. And it's much easier if you just got some lunatic, you know, and he's got his Reynolds wrap on his head and he's talking about orbs and, you know, disappearing aircraft and all that. But when you start to have these credible sources and these other people and they have unrelated incentives, then it's kind of hard to brush those things to the side.
Yeah. And it's also when you look at this and you're just dumbfounded, you're like, what on earth? Why was this plane surveilled in the first place, right? Like, why was this plane surveilled by two different types of cameras that were out there, right? Like, you I think you have a thermal, and then you've got something else, and I'm not sure, you know, quite what the technology was. It could be shortwave infrared. It could be something, you know, completely different. But at any rate, you know, in our lifetime, I know, you know, we come from way back in the 1900s, got a little gray and stuff in these beards. And, you know, back in the day, I remember being a kid thinking, you know, the idea of having like a, you know, something that you could hold on to, like a comic book, and then change, you know, the different stories that you would get out of it. It would have a screen and all these kind of things. I was like, dude, if we ever see something like that, that'll be, you know, the future, right? And obviously we've surpassed that, left it long behind. Artificial intelligence is now a very prevalent thing. I'm not saying it's great. I'm just saying it's a prevalent thing.
Oh, it's but here.
Then all of a sudden you got possible wormholes opening up in the sky. And you know, and God, I mean, I don't know who had it on their bingo card that an entire jet airliner would be the first thing that they ever saw, you know, in terms of zero point energy in a wormhole.
Yeah.
Man, you talk about living in the future. It is just absolutely wild right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. And it's crazy how it's like you said, how they just happened to be watching it when it happened. Strange, you know.
Yeah,
it's like, I mean, talk about like looking up and seeing a shooting star on like a chance encounter. That's just really weird. I had all that high tech viewing equipment just happening to look at it when it occurred.
It's almost like they meant to do it, for God's sakes.
Weird. Hey, I'll tell you one thing that was freaky that I think it was probably Mike that posted it in one of our chats the other day, but it was about, okay, first of all, black holes in space, they're pretty terrifying, right? Okay, so if you feel like you go into one, you're going to die. That's just how it's going to work. But apparently, black holes can also move tremendous speeds, actually at the speed of light, tremendous distances very quickly. Okay, so I mean, just imagine a black hole like showing up at Earth, okay, coming from hundreds of thousands of light years away. I mean, first of all, you're not going to see the damn thing coming. But it's just all of a sudden, you're gone. Okay, I guess it wouldn't be that bad. You know, you just, you know, wake up and you're, you know, you know, I don't even know what happens to you when you go in a black hole. Like, do you come out in Oz or something like that? Or is it?
So there's a really interesting theory that I forgot where I read this. Good evening, Coleman. We'll be joining us all the night.
Hey, guys.
When when this black hole thing comes along, it's one of those things that obviously does not keep me up at night at all. But I was talking to my 11-year-old who loves this kind of stuff. And when he started talking about, space kind of being like this toroidal sphere, like a big giant donut of space with things that go in and out, the black hole, being the center of the donut, right? And so instead of just getting sucked in and everything is lights out, really what's happening is you're just kind of getting spit into another, direction, right? Like it's just this eternal, inward, outward type of clockwork in terms of a, I don't know if you want to call it somewhat of a toroidal field or whatever those things, it kind of looks like a toroidal field. I shouldn't say it's a toroidal field, but basically it's just a never ending, infinite type of understanding of space then in that. And I don't, for me, we were talking about this last week when we got off air, there's no past or future. There's just now. And that's kind of hard to wrestle with. Right. And so if time is not a linear thing and it's never, never beginning and never ending, then what do you have? You've got a circle. Right. And so, or at least something, more akin to that, but I digress. This is Bitcoin Veterans. You guys ready to kick this thing?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. What's up, everybody? This is Bitcoin Veterans. We've got the stranger, Gabe, is back in the house, and we've got our host of The Daily Show at 10 p.m. Eastern. I'm sorry, 10 a.m. Boy, I'm way off. 10 a.m. Eastern. Coleman, thanks for joining us tonight. Jordan will be here shortly. He's got some fatherly things to do tonight. And Mike is off for the first time ever. So looking forward to this show. Bitcoin Veterans, the mission. We are a group of military veterans and devout Bitcoin advocates drawing from our shared experience defending the values that our nation was founded upon. We champion decentralized, trustless systems that empower individuals and communities, eliminate centralized authority, and advance the cause of a free and open society. By harnessing the transformative power of Bitcoin, we strive to promote a world where every individual has the undeniable right to control their own destiny, assets, and privacy. We stand against tyranny in all its forms, using combined expertise and passion to ensure that promise of liberty thrives. Together, we will continue our oath to safeguard the ideals that define us. We are veterans, we are Bitcoiners, and we are for freedom, man. I tell you what, nothing like a good opening and a good mission to get behind. But in plain English, we're here for everybody that once upon a time signed that dotted line and maybe was a little bit abused by the system, if you will, and maybe fell out of love. But that yearning for freedom and your love for your fellow man, especially here in America, this is that mission. If you're looking for a white pill, you're looking for some optimism, I got to tell you, as soon as I found Bitcoin and I found, these guys, especially the veterans in this, man, it's like rocket fuel for your veins in terms of restoring what you once thought America is and could be. So welcome to tonight's show, guys. We got a banger for you, I think. And Gabe has been out for a while getting after it, and I wanted to give him some time to kind of catch us up on what he's been doing.
Cool. Thanks, man. All right. Yeah, I've been in the field, if you will, deployed, executing the Operation Bitcoin mission. So what Operation Bitcoin is, it's a 501c3 nonprofit that focuses primarily on the Bitcoin education side of things, and also employment in Bitcoin organizations for military veterans. And so on the screen, thanks for bringing that up, Shane, we've got a new online program that we're actually launching this week. It's Bitcoin Diploma for Veterans. And this is a part of the My First Bitcoin node network. Operation Bitcoin is a full node in the Me Premier Bitcoin, in English, My First Bitcoin network. And we launched an online course using the My First Bitcoin Learning Management System platform. It's top notch. We've got some amazing videos in the library that were generated specifically for our veteran groups. The topics are up on the screen right there. Don't pay any attention to that enrollment deadline. It was originally going to be the 20th, but we kept on receiving requests for it. And I don't want to turn anybody away. And so we've just, you know, it started out, we had, our goal was to get 20 in there, 20 veterans. It's open to veterans, active duty, military spouses. And we've got a little bit of each of those groups that are coming in. I was actually surprised by the number of active duty service members that have enrolled in this. It's about a third of the class right now. And so we've got people that are currently serving in the military. Some are approaching their separation date. Some of them are in the middle of their career, but they're reaching out and they're looking for credible sources where they can learn about Bitcoin. And so I think about the effect that that can have to our military in general. If we have a bunch of active duty service members that are in the military and understand Bitcoin, not only just the financial aspects of it, not just, you know, from an investing or a transacting, but truly understand and embrace the philosophy behind Bitcoin and its implications on freedom. Think about what that does. Okay. Instead of having people that are, you know, they're going through an experience in the military, it might not be entirely positive and they might end up getting cast aside at the end of their service. They're able to position themselves for success, not only financially, but also to continue engaging in what I believe, and I know what many of us believe is the most important battle of our time, and then begin to contribute in ways that are going to make the endless wars more difficult for the governments, plural, to be able to execute. So anyway, so that's pretty exciting. That was an unexpected surprise, actually. So our goal originally was 20. As of this moment, we have 49 that are enrolled in this course. Our first live session is going to be Thursday evening. And I'm going to keep it open through the rest of tonight. I do have to close it at some point in time, so I can take stock of our roster and begin sending out organized communication to everybody. But we have 49 in there right now. It's on the screen. Just go to our website, operationbitcoin.io. And there's a link on there right when you get there. It says Bitcoin Diploma for Veterans. And just hop on there and enroll, and we'll get you plugged in. But it's just, I mean, the response has been amazing. People have been sharing it, pushing it out, promoting it, retweeting, blasting it out on Noster. Coleman, you've been mentioning it on the daily spaces every day. Thank you for pushing it out there. And it's just, I mean, the response has been amazing. And there's a part of me that's really blown away and humbled by it. And there's a part of me that's really not surprised at all, just given the community of Bitcoin veterans that we've already built, the people that we have that are already on this mission, and the way that veterans just fall in line with this perfectly, the way that it just, the alignment with the Bitcoin ethos, just, it just clicks for so many of us. And to see the response that we're getting, and I'm telling the majority of the people enrolled in this class, it's brand new to them. We're literally starting from block one. We're starting from the Genesis block and we're going from there. So it's an exciting time. In addition, something else that actually just happened today, there's a veteran training center in the state of Georgia, which is where I am. And it's called the Veteran Education Career Transition Resource Center. Of course, there's an acronym, it's VECTR, and it's a state-run veteran training facility in Middle Georgia. And last year, they gave us the green light to come in and start teaching some very high-level Bitcoin introductory classes. And we kind of approached it, you know, from a Trojan horse strategy, and we just called it Navigating the Future of Money. And so we were real, like, you know, easing it in there a little bit at a time, which is fine. They knew what I was doing, I think. And so we conducted three sessions last year, and then I checked with them towards in December, and it's like, hey guys, what's going on? I want to get some sessions booked for 2025. And they said, okay, send us over a list. We can get you January through June once a month to come in. And this year, I just decided we're just gonna pull the cover off, and we're just gonna call it what it is. And so today, we actually conducted our course, and it was called Introduction to Bitcoin. And so we dropped the Trojan horse. It just is what it is. Went in there and we pulled out all the filters, removed all the stops, and we're just calling it what it is and just going with it. One of the leaders of the actual facility came in and sat in on it and was blown away. So she wants to come in and sit in on the rest. It was a very successful situation. It was great. And we had three sessions last year, and this one almost doubled the attendance in this one almost doubled, our biggest session from last year. So the desire to learn is there. The curiosity is there. Okay. And it feels like there's a shift. Because as anybody knows who's been involved in Bitcoin for more than a minute or two, it has felt like for so long that you've got to convince people of it, right? That you've got to almost sell it to people, that you have to you don't understand. I mean, we call it orange pilling, right? And it's kind of like you're on like this mission to tell people why, and it's like you got to pitch them on it. That is changing. That's transforming. People are coming now to the Bitcoin guy or the person, you know, that gets it. And you guys are probably experiencing this too. And they're saying, hey, tell me about this. And it's like, cool, I got you. I have that information and I have that knowledge. Let me share that with you. And that's really just a mindset that I want to encourage everybody to begin adopting, is that, okay, you know what? We don't have to convince people anymore. Okay, now at this point, our goal is to educate. It's not about selling Bitcoin. It's about educating people, because the curiosity is there. People are coming to that place where their minds are at a level of ripeness where they will be receptive to receiving it. I don't know if it's the Trump effect. I don't know if it's, you know, whatever is going on, because they keep talking about it in the news, but it's happening. And I think that we're turning a corner, and it's an exciting time to do that. And I would encourage everybody who's, I guess, gotten frustrated at their orange pilling efforts, don't sell your Bitcoin either. But those who have gotten frustrated at their orange pilling efforts, now's the time to go ahead and start talking to people again, because people need to have the best information. Because with the popularity and with the greater press coverage and with the orange guy talking about it, is going to come more of the scams, more of the bullshit, more of the shitcoins. And of course, we're seeing it all over the place. And the time has never been more important for people to receive the best possible information. So yeah, listen to Coleman's show every morning. I'm going to shill you, man. But you want to make sure that you're going to places where the incentives are pure and the scams are non-existent. If you're going to anywhere where somebody's talking about shitcoins in any way at all, man, just turn around and walk away. Don't do it. Walk away.
Run. Yeah. Run the other damn direction.
And throw rocks at them, okay? And throw the bird. But make sure that you get your information from a solid place, and don't shitcoin. That's all I got.
Coleman?
Yeah, I got a question for you, Gabe. I'm interested. Are you tracking metrics at all on how you're getting these leads?
Yeah, we're just starting to right now. Because this is our first online course. So as far as that is concerned, yes, we are. The majority of those are just coming from social media posts. And they're coming in straight from that. But I don't have much of a tracker that's built into it. That's one of the things that we would like to do, is build out an applicant tracking system or our own learning management system where we can track leads and see where they're all coming from. But right now, they're all coming from social media traffic and advertising. Actually, quite a few are coming from LinkedIn, which is pretty cool. We've got a lot of people that are stuck in the matrix out there. And I know it's the boomer network. I know that it's, you know, it is what it is. But the way I see it, people that are stuck in the matrix, most of them, they don't really know that they are. Okay. And we've all been there. Okay. And somebody cared enough to reach in and freaking grab a hold of us and pull us out. And so we've got millions of our brothers and sisters that are in that freaking cycle. You know, it's like you were talking about that eternal infinite donut. They're stuck in that thing. Okay. They're on that hamster wheel and they're not going to get out unless somebody reaches in and sets them free. But yeah, it's mostly coming from social media posts right now, Coleman.
Okay. Even the active duty guys.
Yes. Yeah. There are a lot of active duty people actually on LinkedIn. Okay. Yeah, they're out there, and most of them are doing it because first of all, they're being advised to do that, to start preparing themselves and building relationships when the time comes that they get out.
So these are guys near their end of EOS, end of service.
Most of them are. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I was just going to say, you know, you mentioned like the culture and the culture shift of the military when you have Bitcoin maximalists who are in the military. And, you know, I could just think, I was like, sorry, strippers and used car salesmen outside the front fucking gates. Like, you guys are screwed. What a positive influence. I mean, not only that, but the class six, you know, the class six is going to see sales just absolutely tank. You're going to see, you know, the guys going to the commissary and spending more money on steaks. You're going to, I mean, this whole thing, like, just, there's something about, you know, level zero, you know, Bitcoin, right? Is if you're new to Bitcoin, level zero is the people. The people are the absolute best part of Bitcoin. They are the core of Bitcoin, and this culture that is, you know, being, I don't know, exuded, and it just absorbs people, that helps them, you know, make themselves the best versions of themselves, right? It's like you've got this convergence that is happening. So to have this happening on military bases now, where you're starting to get into enlisted guys, and then you said something to the effect of like, yeah, you know, some of these guys are close to their EAS date, which is end of service guys, for you who don't speak military. And then you've also got some guys that are just in, right? Like, and they're in the thick of it, and they're like, dude, what is this orange coin thing, Mick? You want to talk about, you know, creating trouble. I don't know if you guys know about it or not, but there are, you know, guys who have either inherited fortunes, the guys who have become wildly popular on things like Instagram for, you know, their voices in terms of singing or whatever their reach is, and they get called into the commander's office and they're like, we didn't know who you were, and you've got this presence out there and you're rich. We're going to have to kick you out of the military, right? Because when you're rich and you can kind of say, I've got fuck you money at some point, man, those guys, they don't want that in the ranks. And I don't know, it gets very, very interesting, but I think I'm just more excited and tickled to death to think that, you know, military culture, you know, for the guys who are still going in, is going to change for the better because of Bitcoin. And I think that's a positive thing, because I know I wasted a lot of paychecks on drinking and just dumb shit, you know, with the boys, right? Whereas if you've got this turbocharged economic powerhouse of a cadre out there that's, you know, making sure that these guys are going to be well taken care of because of themselves when they get out, not, you know, not waiting on the VA to help them, not, you know, doing all these other dumbass things that, you know, the promises that are absolutely lied about, man. This is optimism. I mean, this is what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, just pure optimism for the veins. And it's not only is it great, and it's coming to fruition. This isn't just hopium. It's literally being built by guys like Gabe, by guys like Coleman out here all the time. And I'm just tickled to death. So you guys want to get into some of the news?
Yeah, man. What's going on in the world? Anything?
So, go ahead. Coleman, did you say something?
Oh, no. I said let's get into it. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, if that wasn't enough to put a smile on your face, we do have this story that is just late breaking. So our new defense secretary, Pete Hegseth, has now revoked General Mark Miley's security detail and security clearance, man. He says Hegseth is now planning on demoting the general. Like, this for me, this jackass, you know, it's been around since, you know, President Trump's first time around, and then obviously went extremely woke, was calling China behind the scenes. You know, the fact that it took this long for somebody to strip this guy of a security clearance, I better late than never, I guess, but within the first 168 hours, Hegseth has been, you know, I guess crowned, voted in as the SecDef, and already doing, you know, this, I'm not going to give him a blank pass, but this is a good development in my eyes. What do you guys think?
I think it's well deserved. I don't think he deserves it. I hope it doesn't go too far back. Again, I don't want to set that type of precedence, but I think stripping of this and the security clearance is really good.
Oh, yeah, at the least. And I'm wondering why. What I'm wondering is what this, you know, what types of things this may open him up for, because obviously he has a preemptive presidential pardon from whatever. But you're right. Somebody. Yeah. I mean, you can't pardon taking away his rank.
He was given a pardon.
Yeah. No, I remember. Yeah. But I mean, that was for like criminal activity. But of course, that doesn't save him from this thing. And I would just wonder what it is that. I think that they're going easy on him, honestly. I think they should subject him to an international court and let them have their way with him. I shared something in the private groups that I'm not going to say here, but I think that he deserves something much more severe than whatever it is he is going to receive. Unfortunately, I believe his true judgment will only come in the next life. But I think that he's an absolute criminal and a coward and a traitor, personally. And I think that he should be treated accordingly. But I'm just going to leave it at that. However, I do think that this is a really good start. Absolute disgrace and humiliation. Apparently there was a big portrait of him hanging up in one of the buildings, and they took that down pretty much immediately within 24 hours of Trump taking office. I think that it's great that he's being skull dragged in front of everybody, because he's a disgrace, man. I mean, he really is. And I hate to say it, because I mean, he usually Somebody who has achieved that level, not always, but sometimes people that have achieved that level, you know, they have had to possess some level of integrity. They have to conduct themselves ethically to some degree, you know, at least worthy of respect. But I believe that what he has done, and then watching him on the stand really after Afghanistan, that really just put the nail in the coffin for me. The man took no accountability. Okay. And he's the senior officer of the entire military at that point in time, took no accountability at all for what was an absolute failure, kept his job. There was nothing negative came from that at all. 13 service members were killed completely and totally unnecessarily. And it could have totally been avoided, not to mention all of our assets and our allies that got left behind to be tortured and killed with their families in all types of terrible ways. I mean, the amount of blood on this man's hands, it is impossible to ever wash off. And so I think he's getting off way too easy. But there's a reason. Okay. There's a reason why he received that preemptive presidential pardon. And it's not because he's innocent. So there, that pretty much says it all as far as those preemptive pardons that him and Tony got.
Laying it down, man. You are very kind in terms of, I mean, treason, right? We all know what treason is, especially if you're UCMJ stuff. Like, everybody knows what that is. And I guess we don't need to say any more. But yeah, this is good, because there's, I mean, right now, I guess there's somewhere around in the 40, I think is the last number I heard, 40 plus four-star generals in the United States. I don't know if you guys have ever heard the statistic, but during the peak of World War II, there were seven four-star generals that won. Well, one, whatever happened in World War II. Now that, you know, we're starting to find out some other things that were part of the largest buildup of military forces, you know, at the time, and seven four-star. So to start culling and starting with this guy, if you can cull this guy and you can start to, you know, separate him, then that's just laying the groundwork for everything that you need to do after this. And I hate that it has to be done, but we're literally at that point. We talk about this all the time. You know, you get to like the 06 level, and everything at that level and above is just nothing but politics anyway. And for the last, I don't know, as long as I've been, you know, associated with, you know, at least the Marine Corps, this has been kind of the way people progress. And I don't know when all that changed. I imagine it's been a long time. I mean, I'm sure generals and admirals have been kind of hand selected for their politics in the past and what they will and won't do. But now this seems like at least we're starting to move back towards what we were told and sold on what America was to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Yeah. Well,
go ahead.
I was just going to say one of the I think powerful things about it is the message that it sends to all the members of the military. And I know that some people have mixed feelings about people that are serving in active duty, being a part of the machine and so forth and so on. Those of us that have been there, I think that we understand a little bit more. We have that perspective as to why someone would join and why someone would continue to be a part of it. And everybody has their reasons, and it is what it is. But I believe that the military does serve a certain purpose, and we need to have some type of an organized military. Now, it needs to be conducted ethically, and it needs to be, in my opinion, less expeditionary and more, protective. Yeah, exactly. Department of Defense. But but it needs to be less of let's take over the world and let's protect ours. But regardless, there are members of the military that are good people. The ones that survived the exodus and the expulsion from the jabs. But there are good people in there that I believe are going to see this as a very positive thing. They're going to see this as an emboldening thing, that are going to see this as an opportunity for them to really demonstrate their leadership skills in a way that they may have not been able to do as well as they could have before. I think that this is a great way. And I think that Pete Hegseth did this on purpose. He dragged him out in front of everybody and he whipped his ass in public and said, here you go. This is what happens. This guy messed it all up. We just, basically took him up and tore the rank off of his shirt, tore his freaking stripes off, and humiliated this guy, dumped a freaking jar of mustard on his head and said, GTFO, and then roll out of here. And so people are saying, okay, look, maybe this guy means it. Okay. Not only did he come in and take the job and then, let Millie fade away into obscurity. He came in, he took the job and he said, hey, get over here. And he took care of it. Yeah, exactly.
That's what I've been waiting on, Gabe, is when President Trump's come in, and I think he signed, we can get into this later, but 300 executive orders. One of the first things that I think has to be established is justice. Justice has to return, and it has to be swift, and it has to start setting examples. And why not? Why not the head of, the United States military? I think you made a fantastic point, and I will kind of, I want to dogpile this thing for a second, because I think it needs to be said, especially, we're veterans. So when that whole debacle went down in Afghanistan, right? That was 2020, right? What, 2021?
21, right?
20, yeah, 21. So 2021, that is literally 21 years after 9/11. And to be 20 years exactly after, 9/11, right? This is a period where a bunch of young men, after seeing the towers knocked down, were sold a bill of goods, who grew up and were absolutely, hey, let's go gung-ho and everything else. Let's go do whatever we need to do so this never happens again. Those guys got used and abused and rode like thoroughbreds for 20 plus years, right? I mean, deployment after deployment after deployment after deployment. If you stuck around, that's what you were doing. And especially if you were a warfighter, man, you were good at it and didn't get too banged up, you were going back and forth. I know guys with 14 or 15 deployments, which is insanity. To take those guys and then have that campaign end as disgracefully as it did, and on top of it, then at the end of 2021, when they're going to retire, or they can retire or are eligible for retirement, to start forcing them out with vaccines, to implement all the DEI bullshit that they did. You want to talk about one of the biggest slaps in the face for, a generation of warfighters. And I mean that, guys that are literally warfighters. They just slapped them in the face and said, hey, everything you did was absolutely for naught. And by the way, we're going to kick you out, and we're going to threaten you with no benefits whatsoever if you're not going to take this experimental shot after 20 years of hell. Holy shit. Yeah, man, you're right. There is a special place in hell for that man. And the justice, hopefully, that we're going to start seeing to roll out, if it starts with Miley, hell yeah. Sign me up. I'll be the guy that does it.
It's a good start, man. I'll tell you that. Speaking of the DEI, there's been some interesting developments with that happening. When did that news come out? Was that this morning or was that yesterday? But with Trump's announcement, the announcement coming out of the White House talking about the DEI policies within the military. I mean, he's chopping some heads too, so to speak, nonviolently. But but yeah, I mean, it's coming down, and I gotta tell you, you know, some people, you know, they love the guy. Some people hate the guy. Some people see him as a more of a president of, you know, a utility opportunity. He's going to get some things done. But I will tell you what, if nothing else, he means business, man. Yeah. He is not sitting around. And, you know, I think about the story as it unfolds, because it's kind of happening in real time in front of us. And I'm thinking about what it'll look like in 10 years to go back, you know, and to watch the documentary about this person, you know, who became president and then was freaking completely and totally sabotaged, because I believe he was. And I do believe that he had the reelection stolen from him. And then to come back, you know, after freaking legal attack upon legal attack upon legal attack, gets his ear pierced in a field by a bullet in Pennsylvania, you know, like 1 inch away from, you know, gray matter everywhere, and still comes back and then wins the damn thing. I mean, what would you do? Right? I mean, you're not going to come in and be like, okay, well, I made it, guys. I'm number 47. Business as usual. Hell no. I mean, you're going to be on the damn war path.
Yeah.
And you've got to be. After a journey like that, dude, you've got to make every moment count, because what's more, he's got to be fully aware, and I'm trying to be tactful about this, he's got to be fully aware that there are still people that want to stop him by any means necessary. And he has got to know, okay, he could be gone one day, and it could be very unexpected. And I believe that he has to have come to a certain level of peace with that fact, knowing that, okay, I've got to be ready to give my life for this thing. And so he's going to make every damn day count. So it's pretty fascinating to me. But anyway, I do think it was a bold move with his latest announcement about DE&I, and especially his comments about the enlistment standards, the military enlistment standards. And really, I mean, basically the way he put it down was, as far as genders are concerned, somebody who is demonstrating signs of gender dysphoria is now disqualified to join the military, because gender dysphoria at one point in time was classified as a mental illness.
I mean, if you got flat feet, for God's sakes, you can't join. I mean, you got a mental illness, like, which I'm not going to mince words, like, mental illness is feeling like you're in the wrong body, like literally, and not being able to cope with reality. Like, hey man, XXXY, I know there's a fraction of people who are not those things, but like, let's face it, society shouldn't be bending over backwards to make sure that those people feel like normal people. Like, yeah. Hey, just be good Christ following people, and I think everything will handle itself. Coleman, you want to say something there?
No, I think change is good. It's going to be painful, and I think change is going to happen abruptly. I think Gabe said it right. He's going to act like he only has 100 days to live, and he's going to get a lot of stuff done right away. I would expect every day for the next 3 months just to be absolute fire. And you're going to see a lot of people who can't cope with it. They're just going to be completely at loss, because they've always been just kind of coddled their entire life. They're going to have the rug pulled out from them. So there's going to be definitely chaos that unfolds, unfortunately, but it's just part of the healing process.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good segue into, you know, what we're witnessing. This came out just a little while ago. This is from America. This is, I think, Elon's pack out there. But it says, breaking: Trump administration to offer all 2 million federal workers a chance to take deferred resignation with a severance package of 8 months to pay and benefits. 5 to 10% of the workforce is estimated to quit, which could lead to around $100 billion in savings. Man, I saw this and I was like, this is an olive branch. Like, this is like, you want to talk about, you know, having some, the planning from Trump 2016 to Trump 2024 is wildly different. Wildly, to have 300 executive orders to go, and then to have, you know, this playing out the way it is, this is probably the smoothest move you could make towards those federal employees. I mean, 2 million federal workers, for God's sakes, that's a ton of people. I mean, in a country of 330 million, to have 2 million people working for the federal government, I imagine there's going to be something, you know, after this where, you know, hey, if you didn't take it and then you get cut, so sorry, guys. You had the opportunity to resign and take 8 months of severance plus benefits. That's a pretty sweet deal from a hostile, you know, incoming administration that's looking to absolutely cut all the waste out.
What was the number that they were trying to get rid of? It was said at the beginning of the campaign. It was greater than 50%, and I want to say it was as high as 80% they wanted to get rid of federal employees.
Yeah, I think those were about right, Coleman, from what I remember. And I mean, but here's the thing, like, why on earth do most of these exist? I mean, anybody who's read the Constitution, right? Like, if you understand the Constitution of the United States, most of the power is wrapped up in Congress. That's why it's number one. And of those powers, they have to be specifically annotated. So if it's not Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, Congress really doesn't have any power outside of that in terms of implementation at a federal level. Like the FBI, the ATF, the DEA, the rest of the, you know, three-letter agencies, most of those are just kind of federal police, and nobody ever authorized those. And the founders were like, eh, yeah, maybe we shouldn't have federal police, right? Like, even the guys that were the Federalists, the, you know, obviously the Anti-Federalists didn't want them at all, but the Federalists even were like, we don't want this thing to be a giant, you know, organization that can just do whatever they want at the drop of a whim. Like, that wasn't how this whole government was constructed. So, you know, to have a proposal of a 50 to 80% cutback when really you probably need about a 95% cutback, like, good start.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just wondering what the plan is to do. I mean, I realize that many of these institutions are probably very grossly overstaffed, just given the amount of work that's actually being done. You know, I mean, I know that a lot of federal workers have served in the military, and I get that and I appreciate that. And I don't wish anything negative on them, of course, but some of those jobs are bullshit jobs, and they'll even tell you that themselves. And a lot of them, I mean, they'll joke about it and say, oh yeah, man, I don't do anything. I just go hang out and collect my paycheck. I'm guaranteed a promotion. I have job security and this and that. And it's like, you know, I think that for a lot of them, it has made them weak. I think that there's a lack of challenge, and there's a lack of expectation that creates a requirement to continue to grow in a positive direction. And I think it's a trap that just about, not everybody, but a lot of people just may tend to fall into that trap, given the opportunity, and may not even recognize it. But the fact of the matter is, for the jobs that are being done, I wonder what the plan is to backfill them, or to find other people to do them, whether because these layoffs and these talent reductions, they don't impact federal contractors, for instance. So I wonder if the federal contractors are going to be hiring on these federal employees, and then they'll just work from a contract status, or if they're going to be partnering with private organizations and then just doing it, you know, privatizing the, you know, moving towards more of a privatization of the services, some of the services that the government is providing. Which therefore would create competition among the marketplace, and then incentivize high performance as opposed to just incentivizing showing up and collecting a paycheck. So it'll be interesting because, I mean, there are some services that are being performed. I just wonder how they're going to be performed now, you know, when they move people out of there. In addition to that, let's just say all 2 million people took the deal. They're going somewhere. You know, some of them might retire, but they're going somewhere. Okay. That water, those streams, if they're not flowing into the government, then they're going to flow somewhere else. And so there's going to be a displacement of talent. That's going to happen in some pocket or another. They're going to come in and they're going to start competing with other people for existing roles that are happening. And so it's going to be interesting because it's a question of volume. There's a certain number of people that are filling up a certain amount of space and a certain amount of roles in the country. And so it's going to be interesting to see how they manage it from that perspective, because there are a lot of things at play here. It's just there's always that, you know, that question of what's next. All right, what happens to all these people when they go? What happens to all the jobs that they're doing when they're gone? But I think it's great that they're focusing on trimming down spending. Obviously, that would be a good thing. So I think a lot of it, we're just gonna have to see what happens. But it's like you said, Coleman, I think, you know, for the first 100 days, it's gonna be something like this every single day. And we're gonna have plenty of conversations to dig into here.
Yeah. I don't like the odds of everybody that's gonna try and find a new job after this. My experience with government employees, they're not really cream of the crop. So they might be on the unemployment list for a while.
Might be. Well, and then at that point, they may become more of a burden to society. Think about that.
Yeah.
Okay. And somebody's got to pick that up. I mean, especially if, you know, the taxpayers are paying for their, you know, their severance pay for up to 8 months, you know, and then they're going straight on to unemployment and other types of government assistance programs. You know, then what does it look like? Because people don't just stop eating. They don't just stop having to pay their mortgage and support their families. They still have needs. And so it's a question of, you know, how do we turn, you know, this less than cream of the crop, you know, into productive members of society? What do we do with them? I mean, maybe that's part of his plan with, you know, getting Colombia to take some of our unwanted people. Maybe he wants to send some of our government workers to go live down there.
I wouldn't be surprised to see him do some kind of change to the unemployment, the way that it's factored, the requirements for it, especially if there's a potential of this many people going to be unemployed. That's just a huge burden. So I wouldn't be surprised in the coming weeks you see something about that.
Yeah, it's interesting, the move towards meritocracy. I mean, maybe we'll see. And you kind of brought up something that, you know, more defense related. You know, Eric Prince, if you guys don't know who Eric Prince was, the founder of Blackwater, which became some other things after he fell out of graces with the United States government, but has also had a lot of conversations with Donald Trump in the background. And that makes, you know, this, you know, whole thing, you know, if we're cutting a lot of 2 million federal workers, which I imagine a lot of them revolve around the defense industry itself. If you're cutting 2 million federal workers, then what I imagine is there's obviously other plans in contingency for, you know, what's about to happen. How do we do what we need to do, you know, in terms of our core mission better? The core mission of the president of the United States is obviously be an ambassador to the rest of the world and obviously be the commander in chief to the United States military. Obviously, in like lethality, obviously being at the top of his list there. If you're taking notes from anybody out there, and I imagine, you know, this is where Eric Prince really plays a role in terms of privatization of the defense industry, and I should say defense in general. This would be something that I'd be very curious to watch play out, because where other organizations that have a money printer can just continue to do everything that they're doing, and, you know, like, we're not going to skip a beat. Like, that's not what I'm worried about. We're not going to skip a beat in terms of, you know, losing these two million workers. Like, nobody in America is going to notice the fact that these guys are not doing whatever they've been doing for a while. What's going to be interesting is if defense is also adopting this and this is being privatized, how much more lethality, I guess, is being added to the United States military, and how it's being done in terms of on a shoestring budget, where resources, you know, and this ties back to Bitcoin. If you're on a Bitcoin standard and, you know, hard money is very hard to come by, then you've got to do things that actually make it count for what you're doing. And you can't fake this anymore. It's got to be like, hey, man, like, we're into a new era where we're doing a lot of drones. We're doing a lot of robots. We're not wasting time with, you know, giant ships. And I'm not saying there's not a place for a Navy, but in general, when you've got guys who are down on the Arabian Peninsula, like the Houthis, that can deny passage for, you know, United States, you know, fleets of ships, man, you've done something wrong for long enough where things need to be corrected, and, you know, 180 degrees corrected. So pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, I think the defense conversation is going to be an interesting one as we see it continue to develop. Because right now, I mean, of course, there are a lot of civilians, a lot of federal workers that support DOD. you know, you go to any military installation and you've got tons of civilians running around. There's a Marine base nearby in my region here, and it's the majority of the people that are on that base are civilians. It's a logistics base, and most of them are civilians. And of course, right now, a lot of them are, you know, they're shitting their pants. But the thing is, I mean, of course, they have different op tempos as well. Most of the time, they're just kind of like in a lull, and there's not a whole lot going on. And so it's just, you know, they're sitting there just burning through resources, collecting paychecks. And it's not, I don't think it's a very fulfilling existence, first of all, but I believe that we are beginning to see the initial signs, of course, of an uptick in active duty recruiting, that will, you know, supplement for any loss that we may have in civilians that are doing whatever functions they're doing for the ones that are working within defense. I think that we can expect to see a very ambitious recruiting campaign being launched with all five branches of the military and the Coast Guard, maybe. I don't know if they're still around, but sorry, man. They're real. But I think that we can see that. And I believe that this kind of goes back to the whole Mark Milley thing. I think that they're telling people that have said, you know what, there's no way in hell I'm joining the military when you got this douchebag over here that is making people, you know, do whatever and get shots and die and all this stuff. But I think that this is a sign that's saying, hey, look, military is changing. Okay. Then you got cool guy Pete Hegseth, you know, because he's a cool dude and he can come in there and be like, hey, guys, look, the military is cool now. Okay, I'm not some crusty old douchebag general that's going to, you know, make you choose which 47th gender you are or make you inject yourself with all kinds of crazy shit. But I believe that we can see that. And I think that we are going to see that, an increase in headcount in all branches of the military. And it's going to be interesting because I don't think that they're doing it for purely defensive purposes, obviously, because before... And I know that Trump is very, he's very, you know, America focused, America first. I get that. But before that can happen, I believe that we're going to find justifications to eliminate threats externally first, before a little bit more of a withdrawal towards a more protective status, plus an expansion of borders. And then setting up defensive measures over there, Greenland, anybody, but things like that, you know, let's make everything, you know, you can't just defend America as it is. I think it's making everything America and then defending that, you know, and maybe I'm just making it up, but it kind of seems like that's what he wants to do. He's effectively talking about doubling our country's landmass, which is, you know, that's kind of a bold move. And it's not just done by, you know, telling Google to change the name on something like they did with the Gulf of America, which is pretty damn cool, honestly. But there you go.
Coleman, you have something to say there?
No, I'm just going to say I have to bounce here in a couple of minutes, guys. So I just want to thank you for inviting me up here.
Enjoy the conversation. Yeah, man. It's always a pleasure to have you. I think you're doing a kick-ass job with the 10 a.m. show every day. Today's show is fantastic. If you guys have not seen that show, they had on the author of Fiat Foods today, Matthew, help me with his last name.
Lysak,
yeah. Absolutely incredible. And, you know, after, if you've read the Fiat Standard, Safadin, you know, really gets into that side of it. If you want an extension of that, a little deeper dive, well worth the read. But
yeah, well, thank you for the kind words.
Yeah, absolutely, Coleman, appreciate you joining us. The centralization of, you know, Canada, Greenland, possibly Mexico, like, or it, you know, everything north of the Panama Canal, basically. Oh man, this is where Trump gives me heartburn, man. Like, I'm just like, God, you know, like, hey man, I don't know if you know this, but the empire is collapsing. We're all about like balkanization to a certain degree at this point. Like, you know, more and more decentralization. And it seems like it's in the tea leaves, but he's got this, you know, he's got this thing in his I don't know, under his skin. He's just got this itch, and he's like, yeah, man, let's put some, basically, let's put some defense on Greenland, right? Like the North Pole. Let's make sure that, you know, we're taking area up there for, you know, whatever. I think it's defensive purposes, really, is what I think. And I don't think he's really scared of the guys over in Russia. Like, I think he's got, you know, a fairly good relationship with President Putin. Yeah. You know, I don't believe, like, the whole Strzok Page, you know, narrative and all that kind of stuff. But
nah.
This man, this torment that's going back and forth between him and Canada right now. I know there's a lot of, you know, there's some Canadians up there, especially in central Canada, like, well, please God, please Trump, not, you know, people like Trudeau over there in Ontario, for God's sakes. But, you know, for the most part, I don't think that Canada wants anything to do with it. But I mean, the tough talk that he has, you know, coming out right now, where he's like, man, Canada lives off of America, and Canada has nothing that America needs. We're going to pull all that shit back here with tariffs. You know, we're going to make our own trucks. We're going to make our own oil. We don't need you guys up there, you know, siphoning off of us and really kind of using us. And I don't disagree. Like, you know, Canada, you know, if there's anybody that's going to have preferential trade status, I mean, Canada and Mexico would probably be a good idea. Having strong people on your, you know, strong countries on your borders. But at the same time, you know, it's like, you know, when you think about, you know, NATO, like NATO's had free healthcare for everybody out there. And I'm not on the free healthcare side either. But when you've got free healthcare and America is footing the bill for your damn defense, like, man, that's a tough pill for Americans to swallow. So it's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe we shouldn't be part of NATO and the rest of these ridiculous, you know, United Nations and WHO. Hey, to his credit, he got us out of that and suspended the payment that they were about to get. I don't know, was it 28 million or something like that the other day?
It's yeah, crazy, man.
It is crazy. So listen, I am. You know, if that's what I have heartburn over, which will probably not come to fruition, he might get Greenland. I'm not going to lie. Like, he's probably going to get Greenland. Like, Greenland's going to be part of America, which is a conversation that I've never been prepared for. I never want to go there. The place looks like a frozen hellhole.
I think it is, man. I mean, that was the big joke that the Vikings played on everybody, right? It's like, let's call it Greenland, right? But it's nothing but freaking ice. You know, what the hell? But he definitely knows how to get people's attention. I'll give him that, you know, and it's, and I agree. I think that one of the things that he's bringing to the table that's a lot different than, or something that I don't know if he even gets the credit for, is that he is really good at making deals. And I believe he's really good at helping people feel like they're getting a good deal, even when maybe they're not getting as good of a deal as they think. Yeah. Because that's just that's the world that he rolls in, and that's how he does it. But I think that it positions him to be pretty successful at his job. I think that there's potential. Look, I don't, at this point, I'm kind of moving past the point of whether I agree or disagree on the things that he's doing. I'm not even mad at him for the shit coining stuff anymore. I kind of was at first. I was like, what the hell is this? Hey, Gary.
Gary, live. You all right?
Yeah. Yep. I guess I'm fine with being live.
Nice. We're live.
What are you guys talking about?
We're talking about Trumpy poo, but yeah, I was saying that it's not even a matter of if I agree with what he's doing or disagree with what he's doing anymore. It's just, I mean, I'm just buckled in for the free entertainment right now, because it feels like anything could go. And it's like, this is great. Okay, we're going to change everything to America. That's crazy. We're going to take back the Panama Canal because we say so. All right, let's go. All right. Hey, Greenland. Oh, no, that's America now. Okay. Well, that was unexpected. What the hell is next? But yeah, I'm not going to get mad about it. I'm not going to celebrate it too much. We have to remember, and I think that there have actually been some reminders about this lately, in his comment or in his shit coinery, that you know, a lot of people were upset, and people get upset when their heroes don't do what they expect them to do. And that's why it's important not to have any of those, especially if you're a Bitcoiner. Okay, you need to understand that this is no place for heroes, because Bitcoin is a refining fire, and it will winnow away every single hero that you have in this space, because what you're dealing with are humans, okay? And each of these humans are flawed. And if you put them up on a pedestal, I promise you're going to get freaking disappointed. If you're not disappointed, then you are deluded. And that's what I have to say about that. How you doing, Gary?
Be your own hero, right? Like the biggest thing, I've been cautiously optimistic about the whole Trump thing, right? Like I went and voted for him just because, I don't know, it took nothing to do it. So sure, I'll go vote for the guy because he freed Ross. That's great. And be your own hero. You've got 4 years. The 1,000-pound gorilla is off Bitcoin's back. Start to fucking build something. If you haven't begun, start now. You should have started yesterday. But the 1,000-pound gorilla is off the back. It might not stay that way, right? Like there might be the pendulum swing back the other way next 4 years. That means there's 4 years to build, to be your own hero. 4 years is an eternity in Bitcoin time, right? Lots of things can happen. You can move the needle a lot, especially in your hyper-localized context. Or if you're a builder in tech, if you're a builder in sales and marketing, whatever it is, you're working for Bitcoin now. We're going to take this thing to the next level in the next 4 years. So buckle up, strap in, find a way to contribute back.
Oh, yeah, love it. Just pure wisdom coming from Gary and that mustache. Say, you did you already get in? You already traveled today?
Yeah, dude, I was sitting in the hotel, and I figured I'd check in and see how the boys were doing.
Yeah, man. I think Jordan got caught up reading some nursery rhymes or whatever he's doing tonight, and then we had a good old Coleman on here for a while. But, yeah, Mike's off. Mike never takes off, so it was a good night for him as well. But yeah, we've been covering a lot of Trump, and this is the reason I haven't scheduled guests so far. I knew this was going to be an extremely lively news cycle for the first, I don't know, 3 months probably. He came out the other day, and I know he's been talking about this, and I wanted to add this to the conversation. I'm going to play this quick video. I think this is extremely interesting.
America is going to be very rich again, and it's going to happen very quickly. It's time for the United States to return to the system that made us richer and more powerful than ever before. Do you know the United States in 1870 to 1913, all tariffs, and that was the richest period in the history of the United States, relatively speaking. In other words, relatively. And they set up the Great Tariff Commission of 1887, and this commission had one function: what to do with all the money that we took in. It was so enormous that they had no idea. It was a blue ribbon committee.
Oh,
Texas. Set up 1887. And what to do with all of the money that we had. And again, Teddy Roosevelt was a beneficiary because when McKinley was killed, he took over this vast sum of money and he did all of those national parks and all of the other things. And I'm not knocking him, but he was given a vast amount of money. And that was all made through tariffs. As we had no income tax. The income tax came in 1913. As I said in my speech last week, instead of taxing our citizens to enrich foreign nations, we should be tariffing and taxing foreign nations to enrich our citizens. Does that make sense?
I'm blown away that he came out and said this on television, man. Like 100%, I was like, man, he's got some history behind him. He kind of knows what he's talking about here. This is, for me, this is a showstopper. I mean, 100%. Like, if we go back to get rid of an income tax and go to a tariff system, oh man, what do you guys think?
I mean, to me, the key thing that stood out there is he's talking about a great period that ended in 1913, right? Well, what started in 1913?
The
Federal Reserve Act. We had the 16th Amendment, the 17th Amendment, you know, which absolutely gutted this country.
Yeah, that's a key indicator. He's talking about returning to before times, before the Federal Reserve even, right? Now, does that mean that that's going away? I don't know. Would hope so.
Well, you know what I don't think people are going to stand for, and I've said it, is, hey, man, look, you got to get rid of the income tax before the tariffs start. Because, boy, I mean, you want to talk about pissed off Americans. Give them all their imported goods at, you know, 25% more or whatever it's going to be. I know they're going to start with like 2.5%, and then what, every week or every month it's going to compound by 2 or something. That's going to make things that are imported extremely expensive for Americans. So if you haven't already dropped the income tax by then, you're going to hit Americans even harder. So I think the American people have got to be extremely loud about this. Hey, great. Get rid of the IRS and then bring on the fucking tariffs, like that, by all means. And then I think that's, I mean, for you know, what America can be and what it should be and what's going to, you know, happen because of that, you know, culturally and in terms of, you know, driving people to have, you know, education and engineering and, you know, education and manufacturing and operations and returning manufacturing to the United States. Like, this is an absolute boom for the United States. And, you know, I think money's lining up. I think there are factories that will line up, you know, people who own, you know, these giant, you know, mass producing mega type of corporations. And you got Elon in your back pocket who understands, you know, manufacturing probably better than most people on earth, especially here in America. So I'm very optimistic if he can pull this one off.
Yeah, even if he can. And I think Coleman kind of hinted to this a little bit. There's going to be a period of pain. It's just going to be part of it. Okay. It's a big change, but there's something about the society, the American society specifically, that is, and I know I feel like I'm beating people up about this, but I really, it doesn't matter because it's true, but we've become so fucking complacent and lazy that people have no incentive to push and to grow and to innovate. And like you said, Gary, to build things. Okay, there's no need to do that because it's all spoon-fed. There's no real challenge that we have. So we have these manufactured challenges and we fall into these political wars that really don't matter, or we have to choose, you know, Kanye West or whoever is our big favorite person that is going to be our champion of the world, because we don't have any real true battles in life as a society in general. And when we introduce these types of huge changes that are going to be sweeping and massive, it's going to create challenges for some people. And people that haven't been required to push and to try and to innovate and to build and to look at life from a different perspective, they're going to have to do that now. They're going to have to figure out how to do that. And it kind of hurts, but that's when really cool things happen. That's when you move a culture into a renaissance type of period, is when they've got to go through a challenging situation together and have no choice but to overcome it. Because then when you come out of the other side, everybody is better for it. Instead of manufactured crises, instead of self-inflicted financial disasters that we've been subject to for 110 years at this point, if not longer. But then when we include Bitcoin into the equation, okay, then when we have a sound money, people are required to innovate, people are required to build and have a sound money that they can build their lives upon, that they can use as the cornerstone and the foundation for what is being built. And then we do that as an entire people. I mean, you're moving into something that we just haven't seen before. And so I think it's a time of opportunity, and it's not going to be without its challenges, and it's not going to be without its pain. As a lot of federal workers could tell you right now, okay, they're going to be feeling the pinch. They're going to be feeling some pain, and it's going to hurt. But people have got to pick them damn selves up, and they got to go forward, because usually it's been my experience that if something isn't a challenge, then it's probably not really going to be worth it in the end. And so I think it's a blessing, and I think it's a gift, and it's going to be fun to watch it all shake out.
When I think when you're making a thing, like when you're building something, when you're manufacturing something, right? When that is your primary incentive, like what has been the historical incentive, at least in my lifetime, has been like, oh, go get your degree, right? Push paper, go get your degree, and then go to Wall Street or go to be a lawyer or a doctor, which is again more pushing a paper. Like you're not creating a thing. And don't get me wrong, I'm not disparaging anybody doing those roles. But the brain drain from all these other industries into financial engineering everything, into administrivia across all of the different critical needs of society, right? Like healthcare is rampant with administrivia, right? Administrators ever and ever. So if you're smart, if you're sharp, you can figure out a way to work your way into that administration to like do the things. If you're smart and you're sharp and the entire society is built on building things, manufacturing things, making things, that's when we will see advance in like material advances in our society, right? Like when's the last time we had like some awesome new thing, like some new revolutionary car thing, right? I don't know. Electric cars, like they're cool, but like, I don't know. like, there's got to be a better way to do that. You don't get that until people start getting their hands dirty making something, right? And there's something to be said about making something. There's a different wiring to your brain when you put hands on material and shape it to your will than from when you're writing something into an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah, I was promised hoverboards in like 1980 something. I don't remember when that was, but I blame all of that on NAFTA and everything else where we stopped manufacturing. And I obviously say that a little bit tongue in cheek, but yeah, you're right, Gary. I mean, when you know you look at people, and my family is from Flint, Michigan, and Flint, Michigan, they do one thing out there and they build cars, right? Like that is what they do. And those guys, I don't care, you know, whether it was my grandfather, my uncles, some of my cousins, even now, like they take great pride in the fact that they put automobiles on the road for Americans. And when you understand that when you're part of something, a manufacturing process that improves the life of, the average American out there, this becomes a staple within the American culture. That's something that is, I think profound. I think that's one of the reasons why you have such, mental cases these days, right? Is like people have drifted through life without any purpose and without any mission. Once you start to see things come to fruition because you've actually built them, and I don't know how, you guys grew up, but like I grew up in carpentry, man, like just building things, remodeling things, doing, obviously very hard labor. But at the end of the day, I slept well. I had something to point at. I had probably learned a new skill or I'd figured something out. I'd overcome, some obstacle or adversity and made something work with, probably not having the right materials. And that all comes along with relationships too. So this relationship and this, culture that you're building in terms of manufacturing, that is an extremely strong culture. When you have people who are empowered because, you look at veterans, right? When you get a group of veterans around and they're like, hey man, let's go do this thing. And they've got 25% of the gear that they need and probably a fraction of the money and everything else. And they're like, no, fuck it. We got this, right? Like that is an extremely enduring, magnificent culture that has this indomitable spirit. And that's what America was built on in the first place. So you're literally restoring the indomitable spirit of America by bringing manufacturing back here.
Well, yeah, I agree, man. Manufacturing is huge. And it's something that we have outsourced, obviously, to the point where the majority of anything that we have in our house comes from somewhere else. Not only is that a problem, I think, in many ways from a philosophical perspective, but also, I mean, I just don't like the fact that we have this huge dependence upon other countries for our basic material needs. Let's just say that they wanted to go ahead and say, you know what, we're stopping the ships. Okay, this is a self-imposed embargo. We're not sending you your freaking toasters and your this and your, your curlers and your, your prescription drugs and whatever it is that we've been sending you for all these times that you're dependent upon us for now. That becomes a problem. You can't force a company to send their exports to be your imports. It doesn't work that way. And when you put yourself in that situation, you become like a heroin addict to somebody who can decide if they want to stop the flow or not. And that's just not a good way to be. It's not self-sufficient. It's not self-reliant, and it's definitely not what sovereignty really looks like, especially when you're in such an adversarial relationship with your main supplier of the majority of your goods in your country. So I think it's great. I would love to see more manufacturing come into our country. And it's the kind of thing that's going to take a little bit of a transition and a little bit of a change. And it might be painful for some people because, it's like you said, Gary, a lot of people don't know what it's like to build things. A lot of people don't know what it's like to really go through any type of challenge. They go through the process, they go to school, they get good grades, they take standardized tests. So the school will get the funding, and they can creep the graduation numbers up. They go to the colleges, they accumulate the student debt, they get the bullshit degree that they don't use. They go do the job and then they, have a kid. Maybe they're a dink. I don't know. They get cancer and they die. And that's like become the American story, and it's ridiculous. And it has created a society that is kind of, it's like you said, Shane, they're just kind of drifting around purposelessly. I probably added an extra syllable there, but they're drifting around without purpose. And it's no wonder that we have all these mental illness problems going on. It's no wonder that the most played commercials on TV, if you happen to watch TV, are some new brain medicine that you need. Otherwise, you're going to be sad about things. But taking the medicine might also give you suicidal ideation. So be real careful with it. But it's no mistake, because a people without purpose are a people without joy in their lives. If you don't have a purpose, then there's no reason to even exist. And it's interesting, because especially when we talk about the veteran population that experiences this on a more acute level, because we've been a part of something that, you know, whatever we may see it as now, at the time, it felt like it was something that was a part of a purpose. Whether it was just the people that you were serving with, the team that you were a part of, you had a purpose, you had a role, and you had a mission. You knew what you were doing. You knew how it was impacting a larger picture. And then you get out into the civilian world, and it's like, what the hell? I'm like a cog that, you know, isn't plugged into any machine. There's nothing that I can do here that is going to be meaningful. And then they start to tailspin out. But again, you know, it's Bitcoin that I believe, I think that's one of the main things that is drawing so many veterans to Bitcoin. And I know that we've had these conversations before, but we have new people stepping into this arena with us every single day. Every single day. I sat in a room with 19 other veterans who are brand new to Bitcoin today, and talked to them and got all their email addresses, and they're all getting plugged in with our community as we speak. They're sending me messages as we're talking right now. But these are people that are going to find purpose now, that are going to find their place and going to be plugged in somewhere. And it doesn't just apply to veterans. I know that's our focus, because that's our world, but it applies to everybody. You know, if you want people to truly flourish, and if you want our society to truly build things and to propel us into the next era, then connect people with a purpose, connect people with a community. And it's like you talk about often, Gary, you know, let's start on the community level. Let's start it on the smallest local level that we possibly can, and get people plugged in, get people making a difference where they are. And that stuff just sends shockwaves out throughout the larger ecosystem.
Yeah, I think the tariff thing that you let in there with on a Bitcoin standard, right? So there's, I see a few things happening, right? So things are going to get expensive if the tariffs hit, because the reshoring of manufacturing doesn't happen overnight. But what you're going to see is, I'm not paying an increase in price for a shit product, right? Like, there will be a demand for goods, but there will be a demand for durable goods, right? So if you're an American manufacturer, and you realize that you can't get your toaster, you know, you can't get toasters from overseas anymore, and you got to make them here. If you don't make the best toaster, everybody's going to be paying a premium on the price already. So they're going to want the best toaster anyway, right? And this is something that you just see in general with Bitcoin, because if I'm going to spend my Bitcoin, I'm only going to spend it on the best thing that I can get. I'm not going to spend it on some cheap plastic junk, right, that I can go get for a dime a dozen. I want high quality thing. I'm going to appreciate handcrafted things over something that just comes off an assembly line necessarily. Thing with character, things with art, with soul put into the creation of it, right? And so, yes, the tariffs are going to suck, but it's gonna like you're going to suffer the pain and then realize the gain later, right? It's just like going to the gym. Right. In Bitcoiners, it's the same principle. We have this thing, we have this primary, this apex predator money.
We'll see.
There we go.
Hey, there you are. He's back. We got apex predator money
and we just don't, you're not gonna trade that away for something that is a dime a dozen, right? No. I also think there's an interesting angle here from like the 3D printing scene. I mean, 3D printers are all across America. There are already microcosms of 3D printing manufacturing happening, right? Like, I got a buddy in my hometown. He clears a stupid amount of fiat by just 3D printing dumb things and selling it online. right? And it's like a side business for him that his like 13-year-old son runs because it's that easy to do. You get more 3D printers in the hands of Americans and stuff like that. Like, all you got to do is just load it up, right? And 3D printing is just the start. CNC machines, all these things are readily available.
Man, getting it done. I gotta tell you, man, like I'm inspired. There's a good part of Bushido for Bitcoin that talks about restoring beauty, and you talked about craftsmanship and kind of the soul that goes into making things. And I think that is right. You know, there's things that I have in my shop down in my basement that are from my grandfather that were his tools that are just these beautiful tools, handcrafted. You know, probably very few in existence now, but I mean, even some of the ones that were electric that still run, like I have his, you know, electric sander, I've got his planer, I've got these, you know, scroll saws, big, heavy ass, you know, like machines that will probably be inherited by my great, great grandkids at some point. So, yeah, I think you're right. There are some other things that are still happening. We still got about 10 minutes left. So I wanted to cover this because this one is a very close story to Bitcoin veterans. Donald Trump went up to Western North Carolina, and I think this is some of his best work yet. And common sense. I don't think you get this out of most other people. You definitely don't get it out of Democrats or House, you know, Republicans. This is one of those things that has been in our side and obviously on our minds here at Bitcoin Veterans for a long time. I wanted to play this short clip for you guys because this is something that has given some of the people that we're helping up there a lot of hope.
Potter, pleased to announce that under our leadership, the federal government will be surging housing solutions to this state that go beyond mere temporary hotel stays that ended up being very short term. The government wouldn't do it any longer, which is ridiculous.
Boy, here we go.
We'll marshal all available resources to bring back potable water and make your water and infrastructure dramatically more reliable very quickly. Today, I'll also be signing an executive order slashing all red tape and bureaucratic barriers and permits to ensure the rapid reconstruction of the roads here in Western North Carolina. We're going to go through a permitting process that's called no permitting. Just get it done. That's the way they did it many years ago. I guarantee that. Please announce.
Oh, beautiful dogs. Beautiful dogs. Like I just can't even help myself with this guy sometimes. I know it's a bit protracted and kind of hysterical, but at the same time, does it need to be done? Yeah. I mean, you literally have, you know, mayors and city councils and county commissioners up there that are not letting people rebuild homes in the middle of winter because they haven't got the right permits and they haven't gone through the EPA findings of, you know, if their land has toxic waste on it and everything else. Meanwhile, they don't have a pot to piss in. They're freezing their ass off living in tents or, you know, maybe even in a car or something like that. And you're like, yeah, man, like common sense at this point, just get something done for it. And yeah, no permits. I am so happy to see somebody take charge of the situation and tell these idiots, hey, we're going to do shit and you're going to get out of the way and we're going to just let people help people, which is the absolute American way.
Well, and like the ADIQ take on this is like, hey, you told me I can't build my house, but I'm going to build it now because Donald Trump said I can. And like, you just go fucking build it, which is how it should be, right? Like, that's how it should be. It's like, you're getting permission to not ask permission, but you don't need permission to not ask permission. You don't have to ask permission. Like, this whole country was founded on this thing called civil disobedience, right? Where you just don't do what the king is telling you to do, right? Like, why? What are you going to send your guys to come get me? Go ahead. I live in the middle of the mountains.
And I got buddies, you know, this holler is filled with like our family, right? They used to call them clans before clan became a fucking bad name. Right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. This,
you don't call them that anymore.
Yeah. We've got our buddy, James Artman up there who's running Resilient Recovery. And I just checked in with him again today. He's going to be sending us a lot of, videos of what he's doing. So in the bigger picture, James has received about $100,000 in terms of Bitcoin from Bitcoin veterans. He's now a Bitcoiner himself. The equipment, the manpower, the warehouse that he's running, he's got a 500,000 square foot warehouse up there that he is running operations out of in, I think, at least three, if not four or five different counties in Western North Carolina. So on a daily basis, the grind of getting up and going through this, hellscape that is, he's been telling me stories about how they haven't been able to build bridges. And a lot of people have their own personal bridge over streams from the main highways to their homes up there. So not only is Donald Trump clearing the red tape for these guys to build their homes, but they're going to go back in and restore all the bridges to these places as well. Is it going to cost? Yeah, it's going to cost. But if we're not sending, billions of dollars to Ukraine and possibly, Israel, we'll see. For there to be relief coming in now at the end of January, this has been going on since early October. The people up there, I think they just got this giant hope that good things are coming their way and things are going to be restored to at least a normal part of their life again. And that's, I think that's one of the greatest things in this whole story.
Hell yeah.
And I was talking to one of the guys down here and I was, he was asking me like, what is this Bitcoin veterans thing? And I was telling him, and I was like, hey man, there's like a bunch of veterans, right? Like we all signed up and swore this oath because we truly feel civically minded, right? Like we truly want to serve our fellow man, our community, our nation, whatever it is. And Bitcoin gives us an avenue to do that. And I think this Western North Carolina and being able to provide Jim with this money to run his operations is a key example of a veteran who just wants to serve his community and is able to execute on that. And then he's enabled by Bitcoin, right? Like that's what it is. And nobody can come in there and buy him out because he doesn't need the money, right? Like it's like there's no broken incentive there. We're realigning incentives on this Bitcoin standard where humans can take care of humans right next door.
Hell yeah. In a permissionless fashion, no less, as it should be, and yeah, then it's, yeah, exactly. I mean, and the people that made the biggest difference, when this first happened, everything up in North Carolina were those that did not ask permission, obviously. And so that is, I believe that truly did save people's lives. And I mean, people clearly are still at risk right now. And so for him to come in and for him to do this and to say, look, just freaking do it. All right. If it needs to be done, just do it. Don't stop asking people. Don't get caught up in the red tape. Throw all that bullshit out the window. If something needs to get done, just do it. People's lives are on the line right here. I'm expecting he'll approach California in a similar way, although it is a very dissimilar situation. But I'm curious to see how he's going to what type of conversation points he's going to give us on his visit there, because I believe that's going to be next.
Well, he's already done it, Gabe.
Has he?
Yeah, he's already hit up California too. He sat down with the mayor, who he made look like an absolute doofus.
That's kind of what I thought might happen.
Yeah, he said basically you're going to get out of the way and allow these people to come back into their homes. We're not doing any of this environmental nonsense. We're going to clear the land, we're going to get everything back up, and we're going to start building again. Do you have that? You understand? And like basically laid down the law in front of a huge presser with the mayor sitting right next to him, and she was like and he was like, no, this is the way it is. And I wanted to kind of regress back into James up there in terms of how Bitcoin has been a not only effective, but how it's going to be effective going into the future because of this man. You get to think about, this is a guy that was working in, as many places as possible where a lot of the politicians in those areas who, and even churches for that matter, when they found out that he wasn't working specifically in a zone, right? Whether it's a county or a city, they got pissy. And they were like, well, we're going to withdraw all our support and tell everybody not to, work with you in these areas. And he was like, fine, fuck you, get lost. I'm going to continue to help my fellow man wherever they need it. And, you know, this guy now being empowered because of Bitcoin, the fact that he was a veteran, the fact that he was a 75th Ranger Regiment, you know, sniper instructor on top of it all. Like, you think this guy is the guy that's going to let, you know, peons, you know, that have titles in their name get in his way? No, he's going to devise ways to go out and get around him and, you know, ask for forgiveness later. So to have this giant of a man out there doing what he's doing and now understands Bitcoin on top of it, he's going to be a pillar in you know, counties. He's going to be one of those guys that is, I think, you know, myth and legend combined at some point when they talk about, you know, the 2024 floods that came through North Carolina. You know, this James Artman guy who was, you know, this, you know, not a Bitcoiner but a veteran, started taking care of everybody, was helped out by these guys who were in Bitcoin veterans, and this entire Bitcoin community became a Bitcoiner and then led his region into becoming Bitcoiners themselves because he understood it and he affected so much change because he affected people's lives by reaching out through charity. So I mean you want to talk about bright orange pills for the future, I'm tickled to death that this is happening and what's going to happen after this because of this audience and everybody out there that contributed to that.
Hell yeah. That's how it's done, man.
We're getting late, guys. You guys got any parting thoughts for tonight?
Well, it's good to be here. It's been a while. So thanks for letting me hang out for a little while.
Yeah, man.
But I think that I'm glad that we just had a chance just to kind of go through these and just kind of unwrap them a little bit, get Coleman's perspective on it too, and of course Gary. Yeah, I mean, you kind of showed up looking like Samuel L. Jackson on the back porch there for a second, man. It kind of freaked me out. it's like you said, man. We're going to have all types of entertainment content, man, coming our way for the next 100 days. And it's like I said, man, I'm buckled up and I'm hanging on for the ride. It's going to be a trip. It's going to be cool. But also it's like you said, Gary, we're at a moment in time where we've got an opportunity to get out there and let's do the damn thing. The situation is right. The environment is right. The conditions are right. There's no excuse. If you've been waiting for the right time to get out there and to build, if you've been waiting for the right time to go out there and to do what it is that you're waiting to do, now's the time. Just freaking do it. Get plugged in with a community of people. If you're a veteran, get connected with us, get plugged into our community. Even if you're not, hit us up, man. Let's get connected. Let's make some things happen together. And so, now's the time. Let's make it happen. Let's all live like we only got 100 days left, and let's make it work.
Be peaceful, not harmless. Stay humble and stack sense.
Man of few powerful words. I love it. Bitcoin Veterans is really, we're a decentralized group. If you want to become part of this, you want to learn Bitcoin, you don't know Bitcoin, this is one of the original reasons why we set this up, is to teach people. We've got some amazing guys like Gabe out there, Gary. We have a cadre that is absolutely full of guys, whether it's mining, whether it's just understanding the basics of Bitcoin, setting up your own wallet, getting things off of exchanges, understanding how to store your keys, all of this stuff. Bitcoinveterans.org. You can go sign up. We'll get you into the chats. You don't have to be a veteran. If you want to do this as a civilian, we're open to that as well. We're going to need everybody in this mission. We've also got some fantastic partners out there. We've got Solo Satoshi in terms of Bitcoin miners, which are incredible miners. And it's the way of the future. If we don't start decentralizing mining, let's just say we need to start decentralizing mining more and more and more. Run your own miner. A little Bitcoin miner from Solo Satoshi costs you, what, $150? Pretty simple to set up. And then there are our buddies over at Coddle.co, which is Punchplate. Punchplate is, I think, the cheapest way to store your seed words, and it's super simple. Like, it's not, you know, where you organize all the little letters or stamp letters. You just punch this thing into a plate. It's all organized by a matrix. Coddle.co is those guys, and they are fantastic. And I want to say, obviously, go watch The Daily Show, 10 a.m. on X. That is Bitcoin Veterans every day. It's on Spaces. You can interact. You can ask questions. They have some amazing guests over there. And I think, who do we have tomorrow? We've got the author, boy, I'm blanking on his name. The most powerful guy in terms of antiwar.com. Say it one more time.
Scott Horton, antiwar.com, will be on the Bitcoin Veterans 10 a.m. X Spaces.
Tomorrow, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Damn. Yeah, that's I should awesome, have been man. Able to pull that name out. Scott Horton's a legend. One of the best authors. And if there's somebody that knows anything about the Middle East, Scott's your guy. So you may want to go over there and tune into that. And then before we get out of here, I would highly recommend, if you are interested in going somewhere amazing with your family this summer, Bitcoin Alaska is happening July 3rd through the 6th in Anchorage. You can go to bitcoinalaska.org. Wade has done a fantastic job in setting this up, getting everybody together, pulling in hosts and speakers. I think, Gabe, you're going to be a speaker up there. There are plenty others that are going. Get your tickets. It's a small town. There are plenty of Airbnbs and things like that. Take your entire family up there. Have a good time. See what Alaska is all about. This place is incredible. And I think the fact that this is going to be a very high signal, small conference is going to be life-changing for a lot of people that actually take the time to go out there and meet these people. It's going to be a bunch of veterans and their families. You know, what more can you ask for in Bitcoin? But I think that's going to do it for this week, guys. Gabe, Gary, Coleman, if you're still out there, man, really appreciate you guys. Everybody in the audience, Daniel, Chris, Eomar, Joe, and the rest of you guys out there, thank you guys for being out there. Dr. Nick, you guys are incredible. Everybody who's running things behind the scenes in this whole thing. Just a humbling experience to be a part of this with you guys. So keep up the good work. We got a lot of shit to do. We've got a small time to do it, and I think we're winning. I think we're finally starting to get a couple of these battles underneath our belts, and that momentum is something we need to capitalize on. So until next week, we'll see you then. Peace.